Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Monday, January 26th. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Kern County Supervisor Zach Scrivener was stabbed at his home in 2024 after allegedly abusing one of his children. But despite the evidence, charges weren't filed till nearly a year later.
For months and months and months, everybody is wondering why charges aren't coming, what the state is doing, why nothing is kind of moving forward.
Today, we speak with a Kern County journalist who will bring us up to speed on where things stand for the former supervisor and explain why lawmakers are demanding change. We'll have that conversation in just a moment.
Support for Central Valley Daily comes from the members of KVPR. Join at $8 or more per month and access ad-free NPR podcasts through NPR Plus. Give now at kvpr.org/donate.
And now to our feature story. The downfall of a prominent Kern County political figure has recently captured national headlines. Zach Scrivener was a county supervisor who came from a family of local politicians. That changed in 2024 when deputies with the Kern County Sheriff's Office searched his home in Tehachapi. Sheriff Donnie Youngblood revealed that Scrivener was stabbed by one of his children. That child was reportedly protecting a sibling from Scrivener, who was also accused of sexual abuse. A judge granted Scrivener a mental health diversion, allowing him to avoid a trial and potential jail time. The move has angered lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle, with one local assembly member even calling it a, quote, Epstein loophole, suggesting that powerful people can work the system to their advantage even when the charges are grievous to children. Many are pushing for an appeal. So to break down this case and where it stands, today I'm speaking with Veronica Morley. She's a senior reporter with KERO, that's the ABC affiliate in Bakersfield, and she also grew up in Bakersfield and knows the community well. Veronica starts our conversation off with some background on the Scrivener family and their ties to local politics. And I do want to reiterate that this conversation will be discussing child abuse, which some listeners may find difficult.
So Zach Scrivener has been a member of the Kern County Board of Supervisors going back to 2010. Prior to that, he was also a Bakersfield City Council member. And then early in his kind of political career, he worked, on Kevin McCarthy's team. So he definitely had a lot of just experience in the political game and had kind of a well-known name. And then sort of the second most prominent known person in his family is obviously his aunt Cynthia Zimmer, who is our local district attorney. So obviously another very prominent political figure as well. And then his now estranged wife, she previously was on the Tehachapi City Council. She's now a member of the Kern Community College District Board. And then of course, Zach Scrivener's mom, Kathy Scrivener, is also a member of the Kern High School District Board of Trustees. So again, just everyone with their own sort of political ties, everyone whose name is somewhat pretty well known in the community.
Yeah, it certainly sounds that way. But in 2024, Zachary Scrivener's political life came to a screeching halt following an incident at his home in Tehachapi. I understand you were reporting the story at the time. So what were the allegations that surfaced about Scrivener?
Yeah, you know, we got that call kind of the morning, night that everything was kind of going down. We got a tip, luckily, you know, that sheriff deputies were raiding his Tehachapi home. At that time, no idea what it was about, what was going on. All we knew was we need to get up there. We got there pretty early on in the day, and there were just dozens of deputies, investigators coming in and out of the home. We have video, I mean, showing just the amounts of bags of evidence and cases they were bringing out. Still, the whole day, reaching out to the sheriff's office, reaching out to his staff, just anybody we could, and getting no answers on what happened. The following day, Kern County Sheriff Youngblood held a press conference where he announced those allegations and broke down what happened, saying pretty much that that night, Zach's aunt, Cynthia Zimmer, the district attorney, calls the sheriff personally, telling him that he's having a mental episode, to send deputies out there. And after the investigation, he announces that essentially what took place was that while under the influence of alcohol and under the influence of other substances, Zach Scrivener had gotten into bed with an 8-year-old child and had touched her inappropriately, had molested her, and then that eventually led to one of his older children having an altercation where Zach was stabbed twice. And that was mostly the extent of what we knew. Kind of just the day after, there was no clue as to where Zach was at that point. We knew he'd been taken to a hospital, but we didn't know if he was still there. Had he been transferred to another facility? What was going on? What charges were going to be made? So early on, it was very still just kind of what's happening.
Yeah. Did he have any history of mental health issues that were publicly known?
Not publicly, at least for us. I mean, as far as in politics and everything, I mean, nothing had really stood out. Maybe if you were more in the know, you would have seen that there, I believe at that point, he and his estranged wife were already somewhat separated. So maybe some things if you were very close, but at least to just the general public, it wasn't something very widely known.
I want to circle back to the Kern County Sheriff, Donnie Youngblood, because I understand there was some tension behind the scenes involving county authorities. He was the first to reveal that Scrivener had been involved in some sort of sexual abuse, as you mentioned. How has that dynamic played out among county prosecutors, especially considering the defendant's aunt is the DA?
Yeah, obviously, you know, considering that this becomes a very sort of complicated case for our county, given conflicts of interest and things like that. I mean, even kind of the fact that the DA made the call directly to the sheriff when this all was going on kind of brought up a lot of questions in that area. But obviously, when this was all going down, the sheriff, one of the things he's said is, we were having difficulty because we couldn't really arraign him to bring charges because we couldn't, you know, call his aunt to say, can you bring up these arraignment charges? And so he said they were kind of working with other counties like Tulare and eventually reached out to the DOJ trying to get that. And that's why these initial charges, the initial arrests were a bit more slow moving than what we all were kind of thinking should be happening given the severity of the crimes and these allegations that were being made. And just through that, the sheriff has very much kind of stood by that. It really was just trying to find the correct avenues to do that because unfortunately, Cynthia Zimmer, our local DA, couldn't take this case over a conflict of interest.
Sure. Well, the state's DOJ ended up taking over the investigation shortly after all this sort of came to light. So what's come of that investigation?
So it's been interesting. There's not a lot that we know of the state's investigation coming after the initial charging documents that they released. And there's been a lot that's come out afterwards from the sheriff and from other things regarding the state's investigation. And so, again, our sheriff, the day after this, did confirm to media in that press conference that child sexual abuse took place during this incident, that a sex crime did happen. And so for months and months and months, everybody is wondering why charges aren't coming, what the state is doing, why nothing is kind of moving forward. And finally, after months of that investigation, the state announces these charges. And in their charging documents, they even describe a sex crime. They describe that Scrivener had gotten into bed with a child and had sexually penetrated the child, had molested the child, had fondled the child, and yet he was charged with child abuse, no sex crimes. And then the other charges included weapons charges. So that was the initial confusion for a lot of us with the state's case. Then fast forward to you know, this motion for mental health diversion that we're seeing. Part of the difficulty with that is now that that's in play, a lot of the state's investigation of these documents are now sealed. So we really don't have a much clearer picture, at least from the state side of this investigation.
Okay, as we know now, Scrivener won't be facing a legal trial, but instead a mental health diversion program.
Yes.
How does that work? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so a mental health diversion essentially means that during the commission of the crime or prior to the commission of the crime, the defendant in this case or had some kind of mental infliction or mental disease, something that influenced them to, you know, commit the crime that they did or influenced them during the commission of the crime. And that was basically the argument. Scrivener's attorney essentially argued that the prior years of depression, prior years of alcohol abuse and substance abuse are what eventually led to his breakdown that night. And again, when we're talking about mental health diversion, one of the things with mental health diversion is there are certain crimes that no matter what, they don't qualify for mental health diversion.
Right.
One of those crimes.
Everyone would use it if it did.
Exactly. One of those crimes is a sex abuse crime, a child sex abuse crime. If you're charged with a sex crime, then you don't qualify for this mental health diversion. But again, when we look back at the charging documents, even when a sex abuse crime is described, he was charged with child abuse. And unfortunately, that's one of those crimes that doesn't fall under the disqualification. And so that eventually led to the motion filing for a mental health diversion. And if you're granted mental health diversion, basically, instead of, yeah, going through a trial and going through jail, seeing jail time, you are now put in a program where you're given these certain requirements, you know. And for him, it included, you know, abstaining from alcohol and substance abuse, continuing to meet with his psychologist, continuing to go through these programs. And if he continues to meet these requirements, he has to undergo drug testing, then check in basically every month. As long as he's meeting all of these requirements and he's fulfilling his program, then once he's completed the program, he will be done with it.
No jail time.
No jail time.
Well, another curveball with this case is that recently Sheriff Donnie Youngblood made headlines because he's backed up claims against Zach Scrivener's mother, Kathy Scrivener.
Yes.
So what is Kathy being accused of by the sheriff?
Yeah. So during the mental health motion hearing, the DOJ also described that in their argument, they described that body cam footage from the night that this all went down, Kathy Scrivener was at the house when deputies arrived, and that deputies were attempting to interview the children about what happened, and that Kathy Scrivener essentially tried to interfere by telling the children not to talk to the deputies. Sheriff Youngblood has restated again that he's seen the body cam footage, and in the body cam footage she does that, and that the deputy even tells her that, hey, you can't interfere with our investigation, but that she kind of stays there. And he says essentially the deputies were unable to really complete the interviews with the children, and so this is brought into question, one, interfering with the investigation while it was going on, but the other thing that many people have brought up is she serves as a trustee on a school board. She's technically a mandated reporter. And so you're talking again about a case surrounding child abuse and potentially child sexual abuse. And if you have somebody interfering who's a mandated reporter, is that its own sort of offense?
You know, as we've been alluding to throughout this conversation, there have been a lot of politics surrounding this case, mm-hmm. and it's coming from both sides. What have Democratic and Republican elected officials been saying about the Scrivener case?
Yeah, as far as both sides when it comes to elected officials. We've had state, we have, you know, Congress members responding to this, and especially following the charges and following the motion for mental health diversion. Everyone has pretty much come out on the same side of saying this is not right. The fact that he has been charged with such crimes, that there are allegations of child sexual abuse in this case, and he is now at the point where there's a very, very high likelihood that he will avoid any jail time. They've all come out and said this is not okay. Some of them are calling for an appeal of the motion for mental health diversion. Some of them are calling for new legislation to rewrite sort of the mental health diversion program to be able to avoid this happening in the future. But on all sides, Republican or Democrat, they're all against what has transpired.
Lastly, Veronica, do you have any idea of what might be next with this situation?
As far as the situation where we stand legally, we're still waiting from the DOJ to see if they have any plans to try to appeal the motion, whether or not they even have that option to. Publicly, I mean, everybody's calling for an appeal, but legally where that stands, it's kind of unknown. As far as where it's known, if Scrivener follows these plans, then it seems like in 2 years at the least, he could be completely free, no jail time. And then again, we're kind of listening to politics, we're listening to politicians, to state legislators who are now taking this up within the legislative branch and seeing if they need to change laws and things like that. But ultimately, criminally, it's kind of on a standstill.
Veronica Morley, senior reporter with 23 ABC in Bakersfield. Thank you very much for breaking this down for us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And that is today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.